Now cool the court.
Please be seated.
Alors, bonjour.
Good morning. So, in the matter of Gabriel Boudreau versus His Majesty the King, Alain Dumas for the appellant, Gabriel Boudreau, Olivier T. Raymond, and Sabrina Lambert Michel for the respondent, His Majesty the King. And I'd like to inform those present that Justice Bonsoin is sitting, but remotely. So there are five of us here this morning, not just the four of us that you see before you. Thank you. Mr. Dumas, are you ready to begin?
Oui, merci, Madame la Juge.
Yes, thank you, Madam Justice. So, as is often the case, both at the Court of Appeal and here, it's always hard to tell when errors made by a trial judge justify, first at Court of Appeal and then at the Supreme Court, when those errors justify intervention by the higher courts. In this case, I would say it's the same, but there's a small added error, and that is that at trial, and I'll start with this, at trial, at the end of the appellant's testimony, the trial judge, after the examinations and cross-examinations, the trial judge insisted on getting some clarification about the appellant's testimony. And you'll see this at tab 3. It's 2 pages long. So allow me to explain what happened briefly, because it's very important. Even as the trial judge said, she said to Mr. Boudreau that she needed clarification in order to understand correctly. And in order to understand correctly what had happened, the trial judge reminded Mr. Boudreau what he had said previously. And she reminded him, first of all, that he was following the kia when he was traveling behind that car. He was traveling quite fast, 120 or 125 kilometers an hour. And then the judge asked him to describe what happened from the time the Kia changed lanes. And it's important here to understand clearly how the accident occurred, because the Duplessis Highway is 2 lanes, like a lot of highways, and the left lane is often the fastest lane, and the right lane is the slow lane. And often people who want to exit on an off-ramp to get on another street, that lane is always the slower one. And then the trial judge asked Mr. Boudreau when the Kia wanted to get off at Saint-Foy. At page 74 at the top, she said, "What did you do then?" And there was a bit of confusion about that question, because the Kia had changed lanes from the fast lane to the slow lane, and you can see clearly on the video, in the video, when you see the two vehicles in the video, it's 37 seconds in, and you see the two cars, and this is not disputed. It's the Kia was ahead of Mr. Boudreau's car, and they were traveling pretty fast. And Mr. Boudreau was traveling at 120 or 125 kilometers an hour. And then the Kia changed lanes into the right lane, and Mr. Boudreau stayed in the left lane. And then for about 10 seconds, kept going. And you also see in the video that when you see the two cars traveling much faster than the right lane, of course, but you also see that as they go along on the Duplessis Highway, the two cars approach, particularly the Kia, which was in the right lane, they approach other cars in the right lane that are traveling slower. And then at one point, slowly but surely, Mr. Boudreau passes the Kia. And as he, and this is a, the problem, in as they were approaching the Sainte-Foy exit, so that's important, as they were approaching the Sainte-Foy exit, the Kia, it's a, virtually the last thing you see in the video, the Kia takes the off-ramp to get off the highway. Mr. Boudreau keeps going in the left lane. And shortly thereafter, he said, Ms. Mercier had changed lanes, crossed into his lane, and he couldn't avoid her because it happened so fast. He didn't even have time to brake. And then the trial judge asked Mr. Boudreau a question. At what point did the Kia change lanes? And how long was it before Ms. Mercier's car appeared in your lane? And he said 200 to 300 meters. After that, the judge asked him to confirm that that was indeed the point at which Ms. Mercier's car came into his lane. And at line 21, you'll see the question. I didn't calculate it. I was going 105 or 110. And when you examine and you scrutinize the video, you'll see that at times the Kia, which was in the right lane, had to slow down because the right lane is the slower lane. And so the Kia had no choice but to slow down. And you see that in the video. And while the Kia was slowing down, Mr. Boudreau in the left lane was at the same level as the Kia and was slowly passing it. And they were practically all the way to the off-ramp before Mr. Boudreau was ahead of the Kia. So if the Kia had slowed down in the right lane because it was the slower lane, then necessarily Mr. Boudreau, when he said he slowed down to 100 or 105 kilometers an hour, I think he's telling the truth. And then the trial judge said, I didn't do the calculation, but at that speed, 105 kilometers an hour or 110, it takes less than 1 second to cover that distance. And Mr. Boudreau was a bit surprised by that question, and he said a few seconds. And the judge says, you say it took a few seconds? And he said, yes, 1 to 2 seconds. So you can see that this question shook Mr. Boudreau up to such an extent that it's as if his explanation was difficult, but practically speaking, I think the trial judge made a serious error here. Because at a speed of 105 kilometers an hour, 30 meters a second, in other words, if you do the calculation properly, 200 to 300 meters takes 10 to 12 seconds at least. Counsel, I understand what you're saying, but you're basically asking us to go back over the trial judge's assessment of the evidence before her, because you're going over the facts with us and saying that the trial judge committed an error because she didn't believe your client. So that's all based on her assessment of, she didn't just assess your client's evidence, she assessed other witnesses, the video, the damage report, and so on. So she assessed all of the evidence, and that led her to her finding. Yes, Justice, I agree. But in her assessment of the evidence, you have to understand that the judge, in her assessment or analysis of the evidence, she committed errors that led her to disbelieve the appellant. But those errors were significant. Here's a good example. There's video evidence. It's objective. It's evidence that can't lie. You see two cars. On the Duplessis Highway, at least 15 to 20 seconds before the accident, following one another for quite some distance, and then you see one of the vehicles change lanes and head towards where we'll ultimately learn that there was an accident later. But for the judge to disbelieve the appellant, in doing so, she made errors. Counsel, can I ask you a question about that part of the evidence that Justice Côté referred to? Correct me if I'm wrong with my question, but I don't think the video captures the actual moment of the accident. And so in order to understand what happened at the time of the collision, the trial judge had to weigh all of the evidence. And among the pieces of evidence, in your condensed book, you mention the complainant's testimony, a passage from her testimony at tab 2. And oddly enough, the Crown here cites the same passage of her testimony. And the complainant said, if I understood correctly, that as she approached the Sainte-Foy exit, she saw that there was a bit of a backup, and so she slowed down. And other cars wanted to get off, on and off, so she changed into the fast lane, right? And this is where I'm going with my question. She says, after that, quite simply, all I saw, well, I didn't see much. I just felt the impact when my car was hit. So your colleagues from the Crown, and then there's the damage report, the site of the damage rather, the point of impact. If the complainant was in the right lane and was changing lanes into the left lane, and she completed that maneuver, she was fully in the left lane, and she continued traveling in the left lane in a short span of time, but then the impact occurred after she had changed lanes. Well, then the point of impact or the site of the damage to her car would be the whole backside of the whole back end of the car. Not just the left, the rear left side of the car, right? So I was just wondering, based on that excerpt from her testimony, is that not evidence that would allow the judge to ultimately find what she found about how important that evidence was about the site of the damage?
Question, Monsieur Judge.
Well, the question is that the damage site is unclear. Because the report indicates, firstly, that the damage is on the left-hand side of Madame Mercier's car. The appellant's vehicle, unfortunately, in the police investigation, was very weak on this. They took it for granted that it was dangerous driving, and we didn't even see a photo of the appellant's vehicle. The appellant said his vehicle was damaged mainly on the right-hand side on the front. So if the accident occurred when she had time, well, if Madame Mercier had time to drive in the left lane, even if it wasn't for long, if she was completely struck from behind, Mr. Boudreau is guilty. But it's almost impossible that the accident happened that way when we listen to Ms. Mercier's testimony, who said at the get-go that she moved into the left lane slightly before the Sainte-Foy exit. And when she did that, if we analyze the video evidence with Mr. Boudreau's car, we can see that Mr. Boudreau is probably telling the truth, that the accident occurred nearly at that very moment, because she moved in front of him and he didn't have time to stop because he was caught off guard. We don't have evidence of that. But there's no evidence that shows that it happened the way the judge said either. So to draw that conclusion that the accident occurred in such a way Justice Gagné at the Court of Appeal cited the excerpt where the judge is convinced that Ms. Mercier was already in the left lane well before the accident occurred. And in the excerpt that I just read to you earlier, the judge, when Mr. Boudreau said that he was driving in the left-hand lane next to the Kia, he did so at least 300 or 400 meters before Ms. Mercier moved into the left lane. And if we analyze the video, necessarily it corresponds to when Mr. Boudreau said that, it corresponds to the moment when Ms. Mercier changed lanes, and that's when the accident occurred. Ms. Mercier added, after saying what she said at tab 2, she added afterward from questions from the Crown, she said she was driving in the left-hand lane and she had been in the left-hand lane for a number of seconds. If she had been in the left lane for several seconds before being hit, the accident would have happened much farther on, because that's when Mr. Boudreau is a victim of the weakness of the Crown's case, because it was not able to establish the exact location of the accident. So from the moment where we realize that the trial judge committed errors in her assessment and analysis of the evidence, well, I think that Justice Gagné was right to say that, and that's why I wrote it in my brief, she was right to order a new trial, because there are some shortcomings in the Crown's evidence. But in any case, it's true that often in criminal law, things are factual. But the other thing that I would say is that Ms. Mercier's version and Mr. Boudreau's version don't necessarily contradict each other. There are different versions, because each individual has a different perspective to explain the accident. And Ms. Mercier, the first thing that she said, it's a bit troubling when you heard it, she said, I didn't see much. She didn't see much because she didn't see Mr. Boudreau's vehicle coming, and he struck her. She didn't say, I was hit 4 seconds later. She's a bit surprised. She said, it was relatively short and simple. That tells me that what Justice Gagné said at the Court of Appeal, Mr. Boudreau, in his explanations, His explanations are almost all confirmed by video evidence. Mr. Dumas, what should we do here at the Supreme Court with the fact that the three witnesses who did not see the accident, I'll agree, they do not confirm the estimated speed of the appellant at the moment of the accident. There was even a witness who mentioned 160 kilometers an hour rather than 125 kilometers an hour. They were talking about racing, a type of circumstances that the judge had before her. And I note they did not concern the moment of the collision, but I understand that the vehicles slowed down near the Saint-Foy off-ramp, but she had all of this evidence before her, and at appeal, we don't have these advantages to see the evidence firsthand. You're quite right to say that, but in practice, the evidence of the events that occurred, from the moment we see the vehicles on the video, everything that happened before, the three witnesses who claimed that the two vehicles were racing testified about events that occurred before the collision. A Crown witness set the witness at 160 kilometers an hour, another at different speeds. The appellant said he was driving at 125 kilometers an hour. And the other thing is that the charge is a dangerous driving causing bodily harm. Mr. Boudreau was driving at least recklessly, and in his reckless driving, there is a contradiction because Justice Gagné flagged this. One of the witnesses identified the vehicles that were racing. They're not the same two vehicles, so that has no value in my opinion. And after that, two witnesses, including this one of the same witnesses, said that they were passing each other when Mr. Williams, the witness we spoke about earlier, Justice Kazura, said that the two vehicles were always following each other, that they never passed each other. And Mr. Williams said at one point both vehicles were driving faster, the two vehicles involved, and they passed a vehicle on the right. But because of this, will we assign fault for the accident which caused bodily harm to Ms. Mercier, and it was not contested at appeal because of reckless driving just before the accident, when from the moment there was objective evidence of what was happening, a witness who in explanation of a question for a second time said that, and what they said was validated by video evidence. I've looked at the video evidence a number of times. If you look at it many times, you see the time, and you look at the vehicles, and you can note that Mr. Boudreau was likely telling the truth when he responded to the judge's questions. And her error in her assessment of the time it would take, how much distance you could cover in 1 second, it's about roughly 30 meters a second. Mr. Dumas, you talk about the weakness of the Crown's evidence. That's the expression that you used earlier. But what should we do with what Justice Gagné said at paragraph 50? She feels that it's likely to result in a guilty verdict. What should we do with that? That's why we hope you'll order a new trial to correct the evidence that was not used on the file. The accident, there were no photos of the appellant's vehicle taken at the accident site. Perhaps if we had a photo of the appellant's vehicle, we would see that he did not strike the vehicle head on, and it would support what he said. And we also don't have the exact collision site. If we had that, we would be able to demonstrate quite easily, in my opinion, that Ms. Mercier, when she changed lanes into the left lane, did so barely a second or two before the collision. And that is why I think Justice Gagné ordered a new trial, but Justice Gagné intervened because she felt that the judge's reasons for not believing the appellant, even if she doesn't say so explicitly in her ruling, when you analyze them in the way in which she spoke with Mr. Boudreau during his testimony, and when you analyze what she said to the defense attorney during the pleadings, necessarily, the trial judge did not properly understand how the accident occurred, and that is why she issued a guilty verdict for Mr. Boudreau. But she did not do so. She did so for reasons that are contrary to the evidence. And we, obviously, there is reckless driving in this situation. But is that sufficient for a verdict, for a guilty verdict? I think no. In any case, I admit that it's not obvious, but one thing is obvious in this case. It is that the trial judge committed errors on the matter of the distance. She committed errors on where Ms. Mercier's vehicle was located when she was struck. And in Justice Gagné's ruling, she said at the end that the main contradiction that exists between the testimony by Mr. Boudreau and the testimony by Ms. Mercier is the fact that Ms. Mercier was in the left-hand lane for some time before the collision occurred. And that's why the judge issued a guilty verdict. She didn't say so word in so many words, but it seems like she took it for granted that that's what happened. And I think that represents a significant error that tarnishes the verdict. Yes, you have finished. Thank you, Mr. Dumas. Mr. Raymond.
Bonjour, mesdames les juges.
Good morning, justices. With my colleague, we represent the respondent. As the appellant said, this appeal as of right does not deal with legal issues, matters of law, questions of law. It deals with a strictly factual case. So it's important to go back over the standard of review for a Beaudry case. The trial judge's decision has to be so illogical or unreasonable or irrational that it's completely illogical, such that the verdict, the ultimate finding, is unreasonable given the evidence, that it is contradicted by the evidence. And these are rare cases, because under Beaudry, it says that even if the trial judge makes mistakes, the case, you have to, the analysis has to go further. There's a second stage. You have to find, you have to discover whether the verdict still has an evidentiary basis. And in a case like this, where the evidence is largely based on the credibility of the testimony, we have to be even more cautious. Was the verdict, was there an evidentiary basis for the verdict? That's the issue, the crux of the matter in this case. And I think the appellant is inviting the court to reassess the evidence and to reassess the credibility findings. And that's basically what the dissenting judge at the Court of Appeal did. She took the place of the trial judge and substituted her opinion for the trial judge's. In the light of the evidence in this case, it's clear that there was an evidentiary basis for the verdict. As the majority on appeal said, there was direct evidence on certain things and circumstantial evidence on others that justified her verdict. And by forgetting to show deference to the trial judge's assessment of the evidence, that is how the two Beaudry-type errors were identified. So the dissenting judge, I wouldn't say that she reassessed the evidence necessarily, but she weighed it differently. She weighed it how she preferred. And that lack of deference to the trial judge, I feel that the dissenting judge looked too hard for to find errors in the trial judge's decision. And you'll see at paragraph 47b of the reasons, which has to do with which lane the victim was traveling in when the accident happened. And this is in the dissenting opinion. And what you'll find at 47b is, then this is an excerpt from the pleadings. So the trial judge, at no time in her reasons, found that the victim had been traveling in the left lane well before the collision. You can't use the pleadings to put words in a person's mouth that were never actually said in order to come up with an error, because what the trial judge said in her reasons was fully consistent with the victim's testimony. So at two places in the dissenting reasons, you'll find this in tab 2 of the condensed book. The first reference to the lane was at page 3 of the trial decision. And here, this is describing the context. And the judge says, she switched lanes. She was in the left lane when she was rear-ended, it says. And in the heart of her analysis, you'll see, while she was in the left lane, her vehicle was rear-ended, and that's fully consistent with the victim's testimony. And the excerpts from the exchanges during examinations and cross-examinations, in my view, have no relevance. Basically, it's looking for an error where there was none. And in my view, those exchanges near the end of trial have no relevance. They were not repeated in the reasons. They had no impact on the verdict. At the very most, this could be described as in GF, as an imperfect or summary reasons from the bench. But the fact is that the reasons given from the bench were fully consistent with the victim's testimony. So it's not the type of Baudry error that would justify intervention. And at 47A, there's the other so-called error that the dissenting judge identified. In my view, the dissenting judge erred in considering this a Baudry-type error, because the trial judge's decision was largely based on her credibility assessment of the witnesses. And the words used by the dissenting judge when she wrote that the appellant's version was fully consistent with the site of the damage or the location of the damage on the car as confirmed by the victim's version, that's a clear indication to my mind that the dissenting judge was reweighing or reassessing the evidence. She wasn't asking whether there was any evidence to support the verdict. She was basically substituting her opinion for the trial judge's opinion. A bit further on, the location of the damage, that's a factual issue where there was damage done to the car. So if there's a difference of opinion over a factual issue, is it illogical? No, it's an error. The question is whether it's a palpable and overriding error or not. And when you assess the evidence here, because on appeal of a claim that the verdict was unreasonable, you have to look at what the evidence was. And the trial judge's inference based on the location of the damage on the car was logical and reasonable. Obviously, the appellant doesn't agree, but that's not the issue here. And what's more, it's not quite right to say that the appellant's testimony was rejected simply because of this disagreement over the relevance of the location of the damage on the car. It was rejected for a number of other reasons, and there was evidence to support that, as the majority judges found. Obviously, the testimony of the other witnesses, among other things. The trial judge at page 14 did say that obviously this was a judgment from the bench, so the reasons were given orally. The accused witness must be assessed in the light of all the evidence and not in isolation. Beyond the witnesses, there was video and other things. So that's true. So will you allow me a question that doesn't question your arguments on the standard of review, but in reconstructing the accident, when the Crown reconstructed the accident, with no expert evidence, no one to measure the time that it should have taken, for example, between the time when the claimant said she switched into the left lane and the time of the accident, could there have been any evidence on those points? Seems to me the Crown didn't make much effort. It's a fairly complex situation with two people and video and so on. It's a question that came to my mind as I was reading these documents. Given the problem that we're not even sure how fast the appellant was driving at the time of the accident, the police witness in his testimony, and I believe it was the accused's counsel at trial said, and the police officer asked, he asked the question, and the police officer said, well, we only do that in more serious cases, like when there's a fatality, because the impact on traffic is significant if you have to close the highway down and so on. And it wasn't felt that this accident was not serious enough to warrant that. And in any case, there's enough evidence here to support a guilty verdict. Obviously, in an ideal world, we would have more, but there is evidence of the appellant's conduct in the moments just before the accident happened. There was road racing, there was zigzagging, and so on. And then as to the moments just before the accident occurred, there's the victim's testimony. And I think the trial judge made the right findings. I disagree with my friend on that. But the victim did change lanes. She did switch into the left lane. She didn't see anyone behind her. Of course, there's always the blind spot. But she had a big accident. She was in shock afterwards. But she did say that the accident happened well after she had changed lanes. Exactly. She was able to fully change lanes before she was hit. She said it was really afterwards, really after she had changed lanes, well after. And she was fully in the left lane. So, and she kept going, but as the majority said, the appellant had to have been traveling very fast to rear-end her like that. Is it normal for the Crown to have video evidence of cars on highways? I found it a bit surprising that you had video of those cars. Well, the Quebec Department of Ministry of Transportation has a number of cameras on the roads, and we requested the video. There are other videos on that highway, but unfortunately that was the only one we could get on that day. So it happens sometimes with security cameras. You don't always have full coverage or coverage of the times you would like, the right sequences, but the reckless or dangerous driving in the minutes preceding the accident could be used to arrive at a guilty finding. But if I understand correctly, that's not your argument, because we have video of things that happened before the accident, but there's also other evidence. Yes, that's right. In my view, there is ample evidence. There's evidence of the behavior, the driving in well before the accident occurred. But then when the witnesses lost sight of the cars, then there's the video evidence, which tends to confirm what the witnesses had said about what occurred previously. And then, as the majority judges said, the accident happened out of sight, a bit further down the road, but the victim's evidence was clear, and her testimony and the appellant's evidence was also clear, even though it was not believed. So I think there's direct and circumstantial evidence that supports the verdict, fully supports the verdict.
So the two Beaudry errors that were identified by the dissenting justice are unfounded, and as I said, we need to put on our appeal judge robes to and not reinterpret the evidence, because those two elements that were identified are not, as in my opinion, and they should not affect the ultimate conclusion, which is a guilty verdict. It is well-founded. And I'll make a link with what I said at the beginning of my remarks. The dissenting justice, when we read her remarks, you realize she stopped at the first step. But does the dissenting judge make an error herself in paragraph 43? Because for me, she said the judge added that the appellant's testimony on the sole ground. No, I fully agree with you, Madam Justice. I don't agree with you because I agree with you rather. The judge rejects it for much more than that. I'll just find the page. There's page 14 of the ruling. We talk about looking at the evidence in a vacuum, and there's evidence from the Ministry of Transportation. And on the other page, it's mentioned that the damaged site and the accused's account are incompatible, and the version that he delivers is illogical. When I read that, given the prior circumstances and the impact, yes, you can depend on the video evidence, but particularly on the testimony by the witnesses, which is clear, as I said in my brief. They set him much earlier on Duplessis Highway, and he said he arrives a bit later, but the witnesses saw him far back, and they already saw that this street racing was happening. So the road racing had been going on for some time. So the dissenting justice had a reductive analysis of the testimony, because there is an incompatibility of the appellant's testimony with the damaged site. And in paragraph 42, it's mentioned at the very end, the last sentence, as mentioned previously, the damage report showed that the main impact occurred at the back left-hand corner of the car, and that the damage is mainly focused on the back and left-hand side of the car. I would like you to comment on that. We have a photo that demonstrates that there was damage on both sides, on the back of the car, I agree, but it refers to the damage report as a whole and referred to the back left-hand corner of the car. Can you comment on that, please? On that, I am of the same opinion as the majority justices in paragraph 30. When Justice Ruelle wrote that basing ourselves on a full reading of the damage report, there was lateral damage on both sides at the back of the car. So lateral, left, and back. I think the damage report is very detailed, and we see each part. Both vehicles were a total loss or a write-off. I think that remains compatible with, unless I'm making an error, the concern was that because there was disagreement about the moment of the collision, that the lane change was not complete, she was not driving in the left, she had not been driving in the left-hand lane for several moments, and that's why the accident occurred, and that would explain, based on that sentence, that's why the back left-hand corner was more affected in the collision. The majority justices talked about that, and they confirmed that. That does not mean that the the victim's vehicle was damaged, but it was a statement. I'd just like to hear your point of view on that. I think that the dissenting judge had a different interpretation when she read the vehicle report, because she, Madame Mercier, said in her victim statement that she had been in the left lane for some time, and it was to allow others coming off Sainte-Foy to get into the right lane. And she was already starting to move back into the right-hand lane. She looked over her shoulder, and that may be why her car drifted a little bit in the left lane towards the right. Vehicles can be imperfectly aligned in the lane, and so I think we need to look at this in the light of an unreasonable verdict, because at the end of the day, the witnesses recognized the appellant's vehicle. They said that she was rear-ended, the trunk was up in the air, and photos confirm this. So, and we talk about force and speed. Was the vehicle affected a bit more on the left? Yes, possibly, but that was accounted for by the victim's testimony, and that's what the judge focused on. And so the evidence is reasonable in the circumstances. The dissenting judge, as I said earlier, also made the error of not going to the second step. She didn't deepen her analysis. She didn't determine whether it was an unreasonable verdict given the full evidence. And as you said, at paragraph 50 in her dissenting ruling, she said that she would order a new trial. Unlike what the appellant requested, it was a full acquittal. In his brief, he asked for an acquittal, but she said that she would order a new trial because the evidence seems likely to support a lesser charge. So if we pushed her analysis further, it would seem that in this case that this so-called unreasonable verdict wasn't so unreasonable. And the dissenting opinion does not give justice. There is the trial judge was logical, rational, and focused on the evidence, just like her verdict, which was, when we look at the standard of review, like the majority justice did, and it is a reasonable verdict supporting the appellant's position, and the dissenting judge's position would question the judicial standard of the reasonable verdict, like in Baudry, and that is not what we should be doing today. For these reasons, I think that I've made my point clearly. The guilty verdict of for dangerous driving causing bodily harm to Ms. Mercier is reasonable and is even the necessary verdict given the evidence before us. And for all of these reasons, I would ask you to quash the appeal. That concludes my observations. Thank you. Mr. Dumas, do you have a reply? Yes, if you would allow me, I have a brief reply. I perhaps forgot to say so earlier, but I know that in appeals, the position of the defense attorney is often during the pleas. That can have some significance. But here, we'll understand that the remarks by the judge during the defense's observations, which were reported on by the justice at the Court of Appeal on page 48 and 49 of my condensed book. They're quite explicit. They're quite clear. The defense attorney highlights that following the prosecution's arguments, Ms. Mercier, they said that Ms. Mercier, the victim, was driving in the left-hand lane. And in the discussions that the judge had, the judge was categorical. She always stayed in the fast lane, is what she said. She was always in the fast lane. And then Mr. Barrett seemed surprised by that response. And she restated that she had always been there in there, that lane. And then Mr. Barrett suggested that she was in the right lane, and she said, no, she didn't go in the right-hand lane. She never went in the right-hand lane, according to Mr. Barrett, and the court said no. The judge said, that's the main contradiction in your client's testimony. And my friend, well, I would invite you to say that there is no link between what the judge said at that time and her ruling. So if I return to her ruling briefly, the judge says in page 16 of my condensed book, after talking about the material element of the damage, she said this is perfectly aligned with the description by the victim. When she was driving in the left-hand lane, in the fast lane, she was rear-ended out of the blue without seeing anyone behind her. I would propose respectfully that this statement by the judge stems from what was said during the arguments that she was in the left-hand lane. That conclusion is completely unacceptable because it is diametrically opposed to the evidence. I understand the reasoning of the trial judge. She said that because that's what the victim said in her testimony. No, she said that at the invitation of the prosecution during their arguments, but when the judge discussed with Mr. Barrett, she was convinced that Ms. Mercier had been in the left-hand lane the whole time. And my friend is inviting you is to offer indulgence to the trial court ruling, but we cannot, that cannot stand. It seems that you would have to be very indulgent indeed. Mr. Dumas, if you would allow me, between the date of the hearing and this discussion, which was on the September 2nd, if I'm not mistaken, and the date of the ruling a number of days later, given orally, the judge took the matter under advisement. She reflected, she reviewed her files. Did she not? Yes. Whereas at appeal, we have the advantage of her ruling. Answer, I think that the judge in her ruling should say that I perhaps made an error by understanding that she was in the left-hand lane. If Miss Mercier had been in the left-hand lane, it was shortly before the Saint-Foy exit. That's what she said, and she has not corrected that. We need to live with her conclusions, which rest on a principle that is contrary to the evidence. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dumas. We would ask for you to remain in the courtroom. We will withdraw and come back shortly.
Merci de vous asseoir.
Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you for remaining available to us. We are prepared to give our decision. We'd like to thank counsel for their representations, both Mr. Dumas as well as counsel for the respondent. The court is ready to deliver its unanimous decision, having examined the decision from the bench by the trial judge to determine whether the decision was irrational or illogical within the meaning of Baudry and Sinclair, decisions of this court in 2005, we are of the view to dismiss the appeal respectfully, even if the trial judge could have expressed herself more clearly at times. The appellant has identified no reviewable error because the verdict was based on all of the evidence. There is no reviewable error as to the victim's testimony about the where she was when the accident happened. And so we are of the view that the appeal should be, the unanimous view that the appeal should be dismissed. Thank you, and the court is adjourned.